This is CNT Talk. Every week, two friends debate the issues of the ages as we agree to disagree. It's never politically correct, but it's always entertaining. Join us tonight so you can sound knowledgeable at work tomorrow. We're smacking you upside the head with the hammer of truth. Welcome to the show. Hello, hello. Nothing happened this week, Tony. Nothing to see
well,
here.
We're
nothing
done,
happened.
Should we just tell stories about our kids?
We could. I'm sure that would be very interesting to five or six people.
Actually, maybe lots of things happen on that front as well.
Oh, it's a constant thing there. Tonight you're sporting a different jacket. I've never seen you in a Delaware Blue Hens before, so
yes,
is there a story behind that?
Yes, my sister's husband is a football coach, and this is how I get all my cool gear.
So you're a Flacco fan?
No. Unfortunately, no. Just because I'm sporting the gear does not mean I have an allegiance to the school.
Yeah, it's typically Richmond Spiders, so I was a little surprised to see the Delaware Blue Hens on there. Okay. Anyway, so nothing happened. I talked to somebody today, and they said, are you going to talk about that thing that happened yesterday that kind of people were looking for? I said, you mean the memo? I said, I think we might. Probably comes up in conversation. Tony came in. He said, is there anything to talk about? Obviously, I think the memo. Probably. We can talk about the State of the Union. I don't know a few about that. But
I didn't watch.
I never watch because it's a propaganda fest to me.
I've seen clips and I've read transcripts. And from what I've read, it was actually a good speech.
Sure.
But my policy is to never watch the State of the Union, for whether it's a Republican or a Democrat, because I just can't tolerate the theater. The mandatory standing up and sitting down.
Who stood up? Who sat down?
And it's an hour and 20 minutes. And I just can't stand the entire spectacle. So I never watch.
So, okay. So we got that. So we'll talk about the memo. So this memo has been hyped. If you listen to the Republican side, it had to get out. Everybody had to understand. If you listen to Democrats, it was the end of the free world as we know it. I would say it probably fell somewhere in between to me. I think there's some substance to it, but I don't think the end of the world is coming because of it. And I don't think it was the end all be all that Trump would like us to believe it is. Do you agree?
I don't think it's – well, let's back up a little bit.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of people that simply do not understand from the inception what has been going on. By the way, everything in this memo or almost everything we have already talked about, because most of it, if you are actually paying attention and reading news sources other than the New York Times and the Washington Post and NBC
which I have here.
That will report on these things, if you're paying attention, this was already – known. So this is essentially a summary.
Now, I think it was known to people paying attention. I agree with that. I don't think the general populace was really paying attention.
So does it match the hype, meaning, you know, the Republicans saying this is – in my view, it does, not because of the memo itself, but because if anybody understands what was actually going on, this is an incredible scandal, meaning – the intelligence agencies of this country were clearly – attempting to destroy a political opponent of Hillary Clinton. There's no question about this. Now, you may say, well, how can you say this? And this is one of the problems. I'm sure most people have not even read the memo.
Okay? And we're not going to read it here. It's four pages.
But it's four pages long. But here is a very, very quick, okay, like 1 minute summary.
Let me play the summary I have here.
Okay, good.
So we'll
play the summary.
After much heated debate and a rare public clash between the FBI and the White House, the Nunes memo has finally been released. So what's in it? And why is it so controversial? Here are the facts.
As USA Today sees them.
As expected, the memo claims the FBI and Justice Department abused their surveillance authority on the Trump presidential campaign in 2016. It alleges that top law enforcement officials used an unsubstantiated dossier compiled by former British spy Christopher Steele to get a warrant to conduct surveillance of campaign advisor Carter Page. The memo states that top officials, including former FBI Director James Comey, former Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, and Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, certified the surveillance application. The memo was prepared by Republican Devin Nunes, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. The FBI had expressed grave concerns about the memo being released, but in the end, the Trump administration made no changes to the memo and declassified it in full, according to spokesman Raj Shah. Speaking to reporters, President Trump called the memo, quote, a disgrace, and said, quote, a lot of people should be ashamed of themselves. Republicans steadily called for the memo's release using the hashtag release the memo. And even before it was released, Republican leadership raced to defend it.
We are the legislative branch of government. It is our job to conduct oversight on behalf of the American people of the executive branch in case any powers were abused and civil liberties were abused by the executive branch.
Democrats say the memo is misleading, cherry-picks information, and is meant to deflect attention from the ongoing probe into Russia's election interference and possible collusion with the Trump campaign.
Okay, so that you heard that last comment. I want to read James Comey's tweet
following
the release of the memo.
From Olympus.
From Mount Olympus. James Comey from Mount Olympus. He goes, "That's it. Dishonest and misleading memo wrecked the House Intel Committee, destroyed trust with the intelligence community, damaged relationship with FISA court, and inexcusably exposed classified investigation of an American citizen." For what? DOJ and FBI must keep doing their jobs. That was 1:47 p.m. on February 2nd.
You want to talk about a person whose reputation has gone from fairly solid, meaning a well-respected guy, to in the toilet. James Comey is a disgrace. Well, I mean, and here, so let's unpack some of that summary.
Well, let me just finish on that. He said investigation of an American citizen. The FISA court is for intelligence for international citizens,
right?
Not an American citizen. So he claims right there he's investigating an American citizen with a FISA warrant. Right there, that's
well,
wrong.
Okay, and by the way, James Comey, part of what the memo confirms, now, of course, in that USA Today synopsis, they kept saying alleges, alleges, alleges.
Right.
One of the things that I want to hear now, okay, and we're gonna dig in a little bit to this memo, but remember, this is fascinating. Which is it, James? Because his tweet is basically, that's all there is. But wait a minute, I seem to recall squadrons of people shrieking that it would be the end of the world.
Yep.
People who had read it.
Yes.
Who had read it and said, we cannot possibly release this document. It will damage national security. So which is it? Now, what I want to hear, again, from our intrepid, neutral media questing after the truth, now that, and we're apparently going to get Adam Schiff. So by the way, I call him Uriah Heep. That's who Adam Schiff is. Talk about an oleaginous cretin. That's
wow.
That guy is
look
the worst.
Look that one up, folks. Oleaginous.
But here's the thing. I want someone from the media, this will never happen, since Adam Schiff was repeatedly saying how horrific this was, how treasonous, how what a threat to national security. It was going to divulge means and methods. We have the memo.
Yeah.
I want someone to ask Adam Schiff, please, with your little highlighter, go through everything in this memo and show us which source was divulged, which classified method of surveillance was revealed, what specific information was a threat to national security. You know what the answer is going to be.
There's none.
There's nothing.
There's nothing.
I don't even know why this was classified.
I think a lot of people ask that question. What was classified in this memo? There's
right.
nothing
so
classified.
The first point here is that all of these Democrats that actually saw this memo and were shrieking about how it couldn't possibly be released were lying. Okay, they were flatly lying. There is nothing in the memo. And, of course, James Comey is flatly lying. Oh, it's misleading. Really, James?
What was misleading
what was
about
misleading
it?
About
one-sided.
It?
What was okay. one-sided?
So, again, so now here's the thing. What people don't seem to appreciate is James Comey was one of the three or four people that approved four different FISA requests,
like
okay?
That, yeah.
These run from October prior to the election.
October 2016.
All the way through past the election, because these are done in 90-day increments.
Correct.
So we are well into the Trump presidency, and they are reissued. They're going back to the FISA court and saying, we want continuing authority.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a couple of things about that. Comey signed off on at least three. Rosenstein signed off, McCabe, and Yates.
Mm-hmm.
Yates, of course, is the defiant.
Will not.
Yeah,
uphold.
Will not implement Hitler's executive
orders. She was the acting
orders.
Attorney General.
So what I would want to, and so what we also know, and again, all this allegations, well, I want to hear why this isn't true. They used a document that was funded by the DNC and Hillary Clinton that was sourced through an ex-MI6 spy, but the information came directly from the Kremlin, from high-ranking government officials in Russia, which, again, we've been assured evil, bad people. We can't rely on them, right? So the provenance of this is an opposing campaign. By the way, they attempted to prevent anyone from discovering this, the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
Stonewalled Freedom of Information Act requests about what was the
Still
source.
Being stonewalled on
right.
that.
This document, a purely partisan document, and by think of the layers here. When you go to a FISA court, you have to tell the judge the information that we have is verified and reliable, as are the sources of that information.
Mm-hmm.
James Comey, as the director of the FBI, never disclosed to the FISA court that this was a DNC Hillary Clinton production, that the information they had not verified. James Comey testified under oath to Congress months after the initial FISA application. It is salacious and unverified. You signed off on it, Jimmy.
Multiple times.
Multiple times.
Yeah.
Never told the court that it came from Now, get this, the irony of this. We need here's the argument, Your Honor. We need the ability to surveil American citizens because we're worried that they are colluding with a foreign enemy, Russia. What is the source of this information? It's actually from Russia. Oh, I see. That makes sense. So you're concerned about collusion with Russia, and you're going to rely on a document, the primary sources for which all come from Russia and are paid for by the person who is opposing. So that's a fiasco.
Yeah.
Okay, the fact that even happened, you should be fired. James Comey should be fired, Andrew McCabe, Yates, Rosenstein. Now, I've heard this argument. Well, the dossier was not the only thing that they necessarily relied on.
Mm.
Now, is that how this works, Chad?
Not usually, no.
Okay, so again, let's play lawyer. I'm gonna say this to the judge. Well, here's the thing, Your Honor. 75% of the information that we provided to the court to justify our request for this ability to surveil American citizens was totally on the up and up. We verified everything.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 25% of the stuff we put in there was unverified and salacious propaganda. And what do you think the court? Oh, don't worry about it. Three quarters of it is fine.
Well, let me ask you a question. So this is a court. It's not a single judge. It's multiple judges, correct?
Yes.
FISA court. There is no defense speaking against this. It's all
correct.
It's all the government going forward.
Yes.
Okay. Is it more? Do they need more information than you would need for a search warrant? Or is it similar level of evidence required?
I think it's a similar level of evidence, but here's the thing. That's why the court has to rely on the candor of the attorneys.
You would expect to trust the director of the FBI that he's being honest. That's what I'm thinking.
So
you've got to trust this.
And this is not the only thing that they did. Not only are they vouching for a document that they knew at the time had been prepared by an opposing party through Russian sources that they had never verified. They also represented to the court, oh, well, there's also a separate news article, a Yahoo News report, that has corroborated this. Well, what was the problem with that? The Yahoo article was leaked it to them.
Correct.
About the dossier.
That's interesting. I thought that was very interesting.
So their second justification is, hey, well, we have an article from this news organization that is relying on the same discredited.
Their second source is the first source.
It's all the same crap, right?
Yeah. Well, because in journalism, they talk about you need to have two sources to verify a story. The source was the same source twice. That's not two sources. And the first source wasn't accurate to begin with because there's nothing there as far as we know.
And they never told the judge that at the time.
So here's the question. So it had to be renewed three times.
Yes.
So we're into almost June before this gets renewed the third time. Comey already has testified this is salacious and unjustified. How did he get it verified again?
Well, that's exactly what we need to know, because there has to be a new independent basis for you to continue. You can't just say, well, we still have the dossier.
Yeah.
Like, well, wait a minute.
But he already admitted it wasn't
right
to Congress. We don't know that it's verifiable and it's salacious.
Yes.
So the FISA court should have been aware of that, even publicly, whether they presented it
or not. Well, that's a good point. And so this also calls into question, because, again, if you've read the dossier, as I've said, it reads like it's some cooperative piece of fiction by Danielle Steele and Robert Ludlum. It is ridiculous on its face.
I like Robert Ludlum.
But I like Robert Ludlum, too, although I don't think he's Danielle usually Steele, applying for FISA warrants.
Not typically.
You would think that a judge, even facially reviewing this,
mm-hmm.
who was at all paying attention
and
not in the tank, would say, are you kidding me with this?
What are you doing?
You think I'm going to... What is this?
Yes.
You know, that never happened.
Paint by numbers.
But Comey repeatedly never advising the court of any of this. The other thing the court didn't know, we've talked about this. Fourth ranking guy at DOJ, Bruce Orr, having meetings with Fusion GPS. Remember, this is after Trump is in the presidency,
mm-hmm.
and his wife is on the payroll of the company that is procuring this political dirt and, in fact, advising them and doing the research.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the court might have wanted to know that?
Well, see, Jeff Sessions recused himself from this whole mess because he had contact with different people. Why shouldn't these people have recused themselves from involving themselves in anything related to this? A la, they have connection. There's connection here. I agree with you. Why was that not disclosed?
Minute,
I don't know.
The minute that any even-handed, fair-minded jurist knows any of this
mm-hmm.
about this application, number one, the FBI gets laughed out of court, okay? Number two, in my view, they're getting sanctioned, right?
Say,
you presented this as a justifiable basis for this court to authorize scrutiny, surveillance of an American citizen claiming that they're conspiring with a foreign. This is what you brought to mm-hmm. the court? So when people say, well, does it live up to the hype? I don't think people fully understand everything that is in there is really bad already.
Sure.
Because, again, without the dossier, without this initial investigation, everything that is going on with Robert Mueller does not exist.
Correct.
This is what started everything.
Do we have Robert Mueller if Comey isn't fired in May? He's instead fired in January. Do we have Robert Mueller then?
Yeah, I think we do.
Okay.
Because this has always been the end game.
Yeah, but Comey wasn't there to
shepherd it
through three times.
Right, but no, I don't think it really would have mattered because we've talked about this, is that Trump's justification for filing Mueller, I think he was perfectly justified, or firing Comey, is that it didn't match up with the timing when he did it.
Right.
But I don't think it would have mattered, whether it was January or whenever it happened.
Okay.
No, this is still the road that they wanted to go down.
So this is my continued concern with the FISA court. If they're willing to go along with something like this that was color by numbers quality, that doesn't leave any room for saying, well, maybe we need not to do this. Because just because you can doesn't mean you should. And this court seems to have said, it's okay. What you got is garbage, but we'll accept it.
Well, again,
so you say a jurist looking at this, obviously there was jurists looking at this, and they still came to the same conclusion to let go.
Okay.
That's a problem for me.
That is a problem, but I would also say that this is why the judge has to rely on the lawyers before them on the part of the Department of Justice and the FBI that these are honest people of integrity. And I'm sorry.
They're not.
These people are not.
Comey stands above
James,
as a great
Comey,
thing.
James
yeah.
Comey, Mr. the most highly self-regarding person in the universe, there is no defense to what he did here. He was acting in, I mean, I don't know what his motivation was, whether he's just a political hack or whether he's incompetent or whether he felt that this was something, he was a patriot because he was trying to avoid Donald Trump being president. But no one can look at this sequence of events in terms of how it was handled and conclude that this guy was doing his job. He was not.
Agreed.
At best, he's incredibly irresponsible. At worst, he's corrupt. He's completely corrupt. Here's the other part of this that we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
What's the next domino? Remember all the reporting about Susan Rice and mm-hmm. Samantha Power
all
these unmasking requests, which again are the genesis of which is the dossier. So what I want to know is, was that the subsequent requests to the FISA court, is this now what we now need to unmask? We've unmasked these people,
mm-hmm.
and we need more information. See, this is the way this stuff piggybacks onto itself.
Sure.
And then we leak everything to the press. By the way, another thing that's in the memo, why did James Comey feel the need to brief the president Remember, because this has hit the media.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we're going to have to brief the president on this. Wait a minute, James. Is it usually your practice to brief the president on a salacious and unverified document before you've even investigated any of the...
You mean Obama.
Huh?
You mean briefing Obama, not
No,
Trump.
Briefing Trump.
He did brief... I think there's something in there about briefing Obama as well. Where that went, I don't know.
Yeah, but he also briefed Trump.
Okay.
Because that's, and then they leaked that to the media. Right? Saying, they had to have a meeting with Trump and this is going on. Is this the normal procedure for the FBI to go to the president of the United States and say, listen, we have a very, very grave national security matter. We have this ridiculous dossier that we've never even checked on, but we need to tell you about it. Why do we need to tell you? Well, because we've already used it to justify surveillance of you.
Yeah. Well, Trump should be justifiably upset when he hears that.
And James Comey then also says to Donald Trump, after Trump asks him, am I a target of the investigation? No, you're not. No, you're not.
That's a lie.
Well, maybe it is. But at the time, even if it's not a lie, Donald Trump's natural reaction is, then why don't you go tell the American people that? Can't do that.
Yeah.
And why not? Because as you point out.
Because we want to get you.
We want to get you.
We're not going to tell you something. Now, so let's back up a second. Does anybody believe, forget your politics, does anybody believe that this came from the Hillary Clinton campaign? First of all, we know that it's been shown,
which they tried to hide,
but it came from the Hillary Clinton campaign. It was funded by the DNC, okay, Donna Brazile and Sally or Wasserman Schultz. All right, so they knew about it as well.
Yes.
Okay. Who was the titular head of the DNC at the time? That would be Obama.
He was
the top Democrat in the country. Does anybody believe, this was October 2016, that someone didn't brief Obama about this? Is there anybody out there who believes that Obama didn't know anything about this? Because I don't see his name on this, although it should be.
Of course not.
He had to know. His director of the FBI, his attorney general was involved. His Susan Powers was involved. Hillary was obviously involved. His former secretary of state. The DNC. There's no possible way that Obama would not be involved in this, especially the unmasking.
The unmasking had
to go through
this
him.
This is his administration. These are all of his
Rosenstein
people.
Was his, obviously.
Yes.
You know, McCabe was his, I assume.
And so, again, this really, the other thing you have to put in context with this, side by side with this going on, you have now what we've learned about the non-existent Hillary Clinton investigation, which is all the same people.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're not going to get into that
Shocking.
Again, but we've talked about how incredibly shoddy and corrupt that investigation was.
But Trump spiked that. He said, we're not going to pursue it.
Right.
Why would he do
because,
that?
Because, Chad, at that point in time, he has to make political calculations.
Okay.
Is that a wise
political
decision?
Comey says, I'm not
coming
after you, so he assumes if I spike this, he will stop not coming after me?
No. I think it's because, do we really want to engage in, right now, what is going to appear to be a punitive and vindictive war against Hillary Clinton, who we've already defeated?
Right.
And I'm sure his political advisor said, given everything else that's going on, that's a bad look.
Okay.
We don't need to do it. No, it's not. I mean, because again, that's the issue here is you got to separate. The FBI's only obligation is legality, right? We investigate whether or not someone has broken the law. And the DOJ decides, are we going to indict and prosecute that person? The people that were making political calculations here were the DOJ and the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible. So you have the same people that said, we're not going to impanel a grand jury. We're not going to subpoena documents. We're going to give people immunity without any quid pro quo. We're going to allow material witnesses to sit together during interviews. We're not going to actually put people under oath. We're going to draft exoneration memos before we even interview the target of our investigation. We're going to change the language in the memo to make sure that it doesn't actually reflect the statutory language that means it's a felony. We're going to then go out in front of the public. By the way, James Comey, not a prosecutor, an investigator, and announce, after 10 minutes of explaining why Hillary is lying and guilty, dead to rights on all of this, I'm going to invent an intent requirement in the statute that doesn't even exist. We have text messages from Peter Strzok and Lisa Page acknowledging that Loretta Lynch already knew that Hillary was off the hook before Comey even announced it.
She didn't want that getting out, did she?
So, again, anyone who pays any attention to this The entire thing is rancid from top to bottom.
Okay.
And that's why now the other thing that amazes me in this is you have the left, right, saying, how dare you question our brave law enforcement personnel? Do they ever say that in any other context?
No,
right? These are the same people in the streets with the Black Lives Matter movement claiming that our entire justice system is corrupt. And by the way, nobody is suggesting that the field agents in the FBI are somehow complicit in
correct.
This. What
correct.
People are suggesting and what is clear is that the people at the very top of the pyramid, James Comey, Andrew McCabe, all the people at DOJ, Samantha Power, Susan Rice, every one of them, they need to go. They had become compromised by whatever their political agenda was. And in my view, why I say this is so important, if we cannot have law enforcement and intelligence agencies in this country that are going to neutrally apply the law and instead are merely an appendage of a political party, we no longer have a democracy. Okay, these are the things that go on.
They are part of the executive branch, though.
Right.
So that's expected.
These are the things that go on in totalitarian governments. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying that we are at that stage, but when you have these kind of abuses for political reasons, that's what happens in China.
Yes.
That's what happens in East Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we're just going to use the police to make you disappear.
Yeah.
We're going to use the CIA to wreck your campaign.
Recant anything we don't want you to. Now, you brought up the New York Times. I'll read this first paragraph from the New York Times. February 1st, 2018, the Republican plot against the FBI. In a demonstration of unbridled self-interest and bottomless bad faith, the Trump White House and his Republican minions, in Congress are on the cusp of releasing a quote-unquote memo that purports to document the biggest political scandal since Watergate. To pull it off, they undermine the credibility of the law enforcement community the Republicans once defended so ardently on the noble-sounding claim that the American public must know the truth. Don't fall for it. Because that's the New York Times job.
Right. This is the same paper that has repeatedly released national security secrets despite the requests of the Bush administration, actual national security secrets, meaning the ways that we track terrorists, right? The people have a right to know. We're going to have to release them. Yes, we understand. And now they're apoplectic about this memo. And again, what I want, just pay attention the next week whether a single person in the media asks any of these people, Pelosi, Schiff, Schumer, the whole chorus. You've been claiming for 2 weeks that this was disastrous and a threat to national security and treasonous. What in the memo are you talking about?
Yeah.
No, just show us the page.
Show us the spot.
Show us the paragraph.
They claim it was rewritten since it was shown.
Right. Actually, that's perfect as well. So you have both copies, Mr. Schiff.
Sure.
Can you put them side by side? Is it that semicolon they changed to a colon? What substantive information from the original has been altered? Because this should be fish in a barrel for you, Adam.
Should be.
Redline out all of the nefarious changes that you've identified.
Can't.
There's none.
Well, and I want to stress, every member of Congress in the House was given right to read this 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
It's not like they popped it out there with nobody seeing it. Everyone in the House got to read it if they wanted to. They couldn't take it with them. They could make a copy, but they could read it. Again, it's 4 pages. It shouldn't take you that long. I know you can all read. That should have been the end of it. Now, I want to throw a little roadblock in here, and this is also part of the memo. They talk about Webster's dad, George Papadopoulos, shooting his mouth off in July of 2016 in a bar. They claim that was the genesis of this whole investigation. If that's true, that predates the October 2016 FISA request, but it doesn't predate the Steele dossier.
Correct.
So that's where it gets a little challenging. Which came first, the Steele dossier or Papadopoulos not being able to keep his liquor? What was it?
Well, and again, and this is one of their, let's try this. The reality is that Carter Page was the initial focus of this entire investigation. It is only very recently when I think they've realized Carter Page goes nowhere. He's a dead end, right? In other words,
they didn't care that he was a dead end.
You can't
they wanted to get somebody.
Right, but you can't get to collusion from Carter Page.
No.
So we got to figure out another originating purpose for this. This is why I say that what we really need to do is we need to see, now it's classified, we need to see every one of those FISA applications. We need to see everything they included, what they told the court, what they didn't tell the court, And I can guarantee you that Papadopoulos ain't the crux of it.
No.
But this gets back to this idea again. Even if there's other information, if you're presenting fraudulent information to the court as a basis for this request, the entire request should be a nullity, denied. And that's exactly what would happen.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you only lied to me, or you only omitted material facts as to one of your bases. The whole thing is thrown out.
Should be.
And by the way, prosecutors don't include just sort of, well, you know, we'll just throw this other thing in. Yeah. You know, we'll just throw in like a third thing that we're not really sure about.
Hopefully
you
get that.
Go to the court with what you believe is the most relevant, the most probative, verified information to justify what you want. We want surveillance capability. Oh, yeah, well, then throw in that other thing that someone just found. Yeah, I know. We haven't verified it, but who cares?
So maybe this is a question that I've never asked, and I don't know enough about the FISA court. When you get a search warrant for a normal human being in the United States, it's very specific. You're saying, I'm looking for blank. You know, if it's a – I'm looking for a gun. I can look everywhere. I'm looking for a thumb drive. You can look for thumb drives. You can't take their car and,
right.
and spin it around the block until it rattles out. In a FISA court, are they asking for specific, or is it really whatever you can find based on this individual? You have the
yeah. I don't. You know, that's.
I mean,
a good
it's not
question.
Searching.
I think that's
maybe.
Up to the discretion of the prosecutor. Or the investigator in terms of how broadly or how narrowly they want to focus. I would think typically, particularly because, again, this is a counterintelligence
right.
issue, what they're going to be saying is, we basically want the ability to surveil, you know, targets A, B, and C because we have, or in this case, A, Carter Page.
Right.
Because we have information that he is either actively assisting, involved, co-opted by a foreign power that's an enemy of the United States. And we need to find out everything that he's doing.
So do they have the right to go to his office in the Trump Tower to search it?
I think that's ultimately going to depend on how aggressive the investigator wants to be in terms of the things that they want the court to allow and whether the court's going to say, I'm going to constrain you here or not.
Well, it would appear that this court likes malarkey, so they would allow anything, apparently. They could do whatever they want, it would appear.
Yeah, well, and I would think that generally, since it is going to be a broader request, they're not going to try to narrow their own investigation.
Right.
That the court, once it's convinced that there is a justification for this, is going to pretty much give them the authority that they're asking for. So again, we don't even know the full extent of what they request.
Well, it's a question to me. I see a thumb drive laying in Carter Page's desk. Oh, there's one over on Donald Trump's. Maybe I should grab that one while I'm here. Something like that. I mean, is it that open, possibly, that they could take whatever they want when they're sneaking in?
Because
they're probably not publicly doing
this. They have to be very specific, no matter how broad it is, on exactly what they want to do. They can't, on the go, decide, oh, well, you know what? There's some other – let's just go tap this other guy's phone.
Well, again, they're not coming in with a search warrant going, hey, we have a right
correct.
To search. It's all surreptitious.
Exactly.
So who knows what they grabbed and where they grabbed it from.
Right. And that's why they want to start as broadly as possible.
They can say, hey, put that over in Carter's desk. We're going to take a picture. Say, see, we got it at Carter's desk, but it wasn't on Carter's desk.
Right. But theoretically, what they would have to do, for instance, if there was another individual that was in contact with Carter Page that they now believe is a person of interest. Now, obviously, since they're surveilling Page, but what they then would have to go back to the court and say, we want to independently tap that guy's phones too.
So we can get all that.
Right. They can't bootstrap this, you know, into infinity.
Right.
Oh, on the way, he just drove over to let's monitor this restaurant he just went to as well.
Yeah, 2-hour lunch can't be.
However,
can't be right.
Your point is well taken because given how these people have behaved, what's to say that they didn't do that?
What's to say they didn't manufacture things too? I'm not saying they did or didn't, but if they would
make up
a dossier,
the dossier is manufactured.
Yeah, so the dossier is manufactured. What's to say it's not like you're going in full view with a client can see you. They have an attorney there. They have other people to watch. You're doing this without people knowing, so what's to stop you from planting whatever you want to say whatever you want? That's my problem with this whole situation. There doesn't seem a rhyme or reason. It's do whatever we feel like to get out the bad guy, get Hitler out of the White House. That's what it feels like.
Yeah, absolutely. I
so
agree.
Let's turn it around. The New York Times, again, gave me something to think about this week. They've been giving me a lot of material this week. What if Clinton had done all of this? So replace Trump with Hillary Clinton. Replace Michael Flynn with whomever she might have appointed. Put all the same actors in the same situation, but Hillary Clinton's the president. Does the media go after her as they've gone after Donald Trump? I think we know the answer to that, but we'll say probably not. But do you and I sit here and say,
Oh, what,
it seems made up.
As conservatives?
As conservatives, do we sit here and go, you know, there's smoke. There's got to be fire. Or do we say, this doesn't seem like anything? I'll be honest. My bias tells me I would probably think, because it's Hillary, that it's probably dirty. And not because I think Trump is all squeaky clean. I just feel like I had a bias against Hillary. I'll admit that. I have a bias against Hillary, that I feel like this is within her wheelhouse, based on what I've known about Hillary for the last 25 years. Do you agree with that?
No.
Okay.
Now, again, I'd be
I don't want to be the...
I'd be the first person to say I think Hillary Clinton is one of the most corrupt people that's ever been in American public life. But when you say, if all this stuff was going on, what stuff are we
actually
talking about?
Let's say Donald Trump created the Steele dossier, and it was George W. Bush was in power. I'm saying George would do this, but he did everything Obama did to get this through the FISA court. And we're now looking at Hillary Clinton as president instead of Obama in 2009. And would we have done the same things? Would we have felt the same way about the situation? Everything's Hillary,
meaning
Donald.
Again, Hillary is the one that is now under suspicion of colluding
Correct.
With the Russians.
Correct.
Okay? Well, from my perspective is, I find the entire Russian collusion thing so farcical on its face.
Agreed.
I wouldn't have believed that anyone was doing that, because it's so ridiculous.
Okay.
If you actually look at what they are claiming, and remember, go read the dossier. The dossier claims that Donald Trump was being groomed by Russian handlers along with his staff, his minions, 5 years before he even became a presidential candidate. I mean, this is like he's the man. He's been groomed at a KGB finishing school.
Yeah.
They're accosting him on the streets of New York.
That's why Apprentice had such long hiatuses.
So for me, it's such a struggle, because I would refuse. Now, if you told me that Hillary Clinton was doing pay to play political favors.
Oh, I agree with that.
They're already
yes.
running that through the Clinton Foundation.
Yeah,
but if you're asking me, would I believe a dossier that said Hillary Clinton has been co-opted by the communists in Russia 5 years before she ran and has been attempting to undermine democracy? It's ridiculous. No.
It is ridiculous, and I don't think the media would have been pushing it for the last year and a half. I think it would have died. One news cycle would have been gone, if that.
The better alternative universe scenario for the New York Times to cogitate on is, if this had been Hillary Clinton,
mm-hmm.
but it was, if they knew everything that had gone on in the investigative process, meaning, the RNC hired Fusion GPS and got dirt from Russians in an attempt, created a dossier, leaked it to the media, lied to the FISA court, had people in the FBI and the DOJ who were actually working for Fusion GPS. Do you think the media would have treated this as a nothing burger, Chad? Do you think the media would have been saying, hands off the FBI and the CIA? You're under... No, they would have been screeching to the heavens. You could hear them in the mm-hmm. Gamma Quadrant about how everyone should be lined up for a firing squad,
yeah,
right?
I think so. I think that's what they would do. And that's my question. Are we biased against Hillary or for Trump based on a political position?
All I can say is, look, do we all have – by the way, Hillary Clinton has earned – the rebuttable presumption that she is corrupt from the get-go. Now, people may say, well, Donald Trump has earned the same thing. But here's the deal. Not in this context.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in other words, absolutely, is Donald Trump earned? Yep, he lies a lot. He is low character. We've gone through all this stuff. But, I mean, Hillary Clinton, in terms of institutional corruption, with the foundation, absolutely, she has earned some level of skepticism. Yeah, she might have done this. But it gets back to this. Evaluate the facts.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what was going on a year and a half ago,
right.
But the more that comes out or the more that doesn't come out, at this point, again, has there been a single piece of evidence that Donald Trump or anyone in his campaign colluded with Russia? There's not a single thing. And all you keep hearing is, that's all right, because Mueller is going to flip. He's going to flip Flynn. He's going to. Okay, so you're just basically speculating. Every person, they're like, well, look, there's been four indictments. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Flynn, unregistered foreign agent, complete crap weasel, sleazy, Carter Page. Does any of those indictments have anything to do with Russia or collusion?
No.
Nothing.
No.
Zero. So it takes quite an imagination to say, but the reason, Chad, is because sooner or later, they all know the scheme and they're already cooperating. They're going to divulge it all. Okay. If that's your story and you're sticking with it, that's fine. If you're asked, I would not have believed, because I think it's just so ludicrous, that any American presidential candidate, no matter how heinous, okay, and Hillary Clinton is right up there, was working for the Soviet Union, for Russia, for Putin, an ex-KGB-er 5 years before, and was in a plot, you know, a Red Menace plot.
Operation Candidate better, but
yes, Operation Drago to take over the United States and undermine Ivan democracy. Drago. It's ridiculous.
All right, so let me say this: I wouldn't, if there was a possibility to have a collusion story, it would not surprise me if Hillary Clinton was involved. Her craving of power is so base, it's unbelievable how much she craves the presidency. But that being said, I agree with you. I don't think the whole collusion story, again, breaks down, whether it's Hillary or Donald. What did Russia do that somehow influenced the voting of the public to choose one candidate over the other? I don't care how many Facebook stories you saw. I don't believe that changed anybody's vote materially in any large format. I might be a couple people. I can't say nobody.
The other interesting point is that if you really want to make a circumstantial case, and we've talked about this.
And this is.
As between who looks like they are favoring Russia. Now, what everyone says is, well, look at all those nice things that Donald Trump has said about Vlad Putin. Okay. Yeah, he probably has said some things that I wouldn't have said, because I would have been much more.
You also think Andrew Jackson is the greatest president
ever
had, too.
No, but I mean, he clearly has sort of he's clearly sort of played coy and said some complimentary things.
He likes to have that aura around him.
Right.
But
let's assume that, like, that's not good. Like, in other words, I would much prefer an unequivocal denunciation that says Vlad Putin is a very bad man. Mm-hmm. He's an autocrat. He's an ex-KGB strongman. He's an enemy of the United States. All of his interests are opposed to ours. He kills people. He has people assassinated, clearly, journalists. He's an evil dude.
Can you say that coming in as a new president, though? If you're trying to work with the guy, you're going to call him, hey, you're a horrible human being.
Right. But in other words, if that's the circumstantial evidence that Trump hearts Putin,
yes,
his tweets and his words, compare that again to the actual policies that were in place during the time that Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State and Barack Obama was president. Fair. We've talked about this. What did Putin do during that glorious era? Well, he annexed Crimea. He invaded Ukraine. We had a reset.
Mm-hmm.
Obama is off mic saying, I'm going to have more flexibility. Can you imagine Trump saying that?
Well, that would make him look like Hitler, obviously.
So again, if we're going to cobble together some theory, some unified field theory of who's colluding with Russia, you guys can have your Donald Trump says nice things about Vlad Putin. I'll take all of our foreign policy for 8 years was geared to appeasing and capitulating to this guy.
I believe Putin couldn't stand Hillary Clinton as a person. I saw no evidence that he liked her in any way, shape, or form.
Are there many people that know Hillary Clinton that think she's a wonderful person?
I can't think of any. No. That brings me something I meant to talk about last week. So Paul Ryan fired one of his staffers, his chief of staff, for sexual misconduct, reported anyway, last week. Hillary didn't fire somebody in 2008 during her campaign. I'm actually on Hillary's side, and here's why. Not in 2008, not today, because there's more evidence today. But when somebody's accused of something, I don't think you should get fired because you're accused.
Agree.
And I think she didn't fire him for other reasons, but I think when you're accused, that's not automatically, boom, you're gone. And I think it feels like Paul Ryan jumped the gun. Maybe there's something there, maybe there isn't, and time will tell, but you should let the process play out before you automatically fire somebody because they're accused by somebody else.
Yeah, this is more of the left eating the left. So
I think he was trying to get ahead of, like, well, I got somebody bad, got to get him out because I'm going to get in trouble if that happens.
Well, as it relates to Hillary, because you're right, it's now, well, an accusation is all we need.
Right.
How dare you? Now, again, 8 years later or whatever, we now know.
We know a lot more about this.
But at the time, I agree with you.
And I think that's where we're too quick to jump on these people. An accusation is just that, an accusation. Now you have to prove it. And that might be hard to do, but you still have to prove it before I'm going to say, yes, this person's a dirtbag. Maybe they are, maybe they aren't. Maybe you don't like them, maybe you do like them. But you can't just fire somebody because somebody said, this happened. Well, show me the proof. When you show me the proof, we get, the justice system gone through, then I'm okay with that. But I don't think it happened in either case that happened. Now, 8, 9 years later, this guy's obviously a dirtbag. I don't know what the Paul Ryan guy was or not. We'll have to wait and see if that gets adjudicated. So I just wanted to say, I should have said last week when that actually happened, but it came up here with Clinton. Anything else to add on that?
No.
You feel good about where you stand?
I don't know if I feel good about it, but I think we should probably move on.
Okay. Last thing, and this is more in our early history. We talked about sports topics and things like that. Super Bowl's coming up on tomorrow. We already made our picks in the last episode. We both think the Eagles are going to win.
Yes. sorry to the Eagles.
Sorry. I don't think they're. I hope they win, but I don't think they're going to win. But it got me thinking this week. Super Bowl is the most watched program in the United States. I think it might even be worldwide, other than the World Cup, maybe World Cup finals. At least in the United States, the Super Bowl every year is the most watched program of the year. There is no question. It's not even close.
It's not the Golden Globes?
Golden Globes don't even rate. I mean, I see all these articles. How to watch the Golden Globes without cable TV? I don't care. How to watch the Grammys?
How to watch
I don't
the
care.
Golden Globes without slipping into a coma?
I don't care. All that. So it made me start to think, why are some sports so much more popular in the United States than other sports? And it's a transitional period because at one time baseball was the most popular sport and football has taken over since the 93 strike. But what makes a sport in the United States more popular than other sports? I mean, they all have a certain level of violence. They all have a certain level of competition. Sometimes it's speed of the game. Sometimes it's slowness of the game. Like cricket in India is huge.
Right.
I couldn't stand to watch cricket for 5 seconds. But it's huge in India. Why? Why is that huge? I mean, I like watching soccer. I wouldn't want to watch it all day, every day. I'd watch football before I'd watch soccer. Well, football versus football. What do you think, Tony? Is there a reason why certain countries gravitate to certain sports? I mean, in Canada, it's hockey, probably. I'm going to assume it's all hockey.
Yeah.
Maybe curling.
You know, it's because football is violent. Football's incredibly violent. Of all the sports, it's the most violent. It's the most kinetic.
You don't think hockey is violent?
It's not in the same way.
Okay.
Obviously, hockey is a very physical sport, but it's not the same. And the other problem is in the United States, hockey is a regional sport.
It is. Okay? Typically north.
In the U.S., football is played everywhere. They don't play hockey in Alabama. Okay,
they do play in Florida.
Huh?
They do.
I mean, it's expanding.
Arizona.
But in other words, hockey culturally has never really been an American sport. It's a European sport. It's a Canadian sport. Now, obviously, you know, we have the NHL.
Right.
And there's a subset.
More teams are in the U.S. than are in Canada anymore.
Right. So, I mean, that's part of it. Hockey, really, I would separate out from the big three because hockey, in terms of America's history, is not an American
What's
sport.
What's your big three now?
Well, it's still the same. It's football, basketball, and baseball.
Okay.
But probably in that order. Football clearly number one and has been for a long time. Yeah. I actually think the NBA has eclipsed for a while baseball. Baseball, America's pastime. Well, that was 1960. Okay.
Yeah.
Probably since the 1970s. Why is that? Again, you look at the pace of baseball compared to football or basketball. It's not nearly as fast paced. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more strategy. It's not as immediately. When you sit down, you could explain football to somebody mm-hmm. in about 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. See that guy, he's throwing the ball to that guy. See that guy, he's trying to take the head off of that guy.
Yeah.
Right? Same thing with basketball. See that little orange ball they run up and down that goes in that hoop.
Yeah.
Right? Baseball is a little bit more nuanced.
Well, isn't
right?
it not? What this guy's trying to hit the ball
do?
Out.
Yeah, but it's, wait a minute, what is this guy doing, and why is he making these signals with his arm, and why did it just take 3 minutes to change pitchers, and why are we on hour four and we're in the sixth inning?
Yeah.
I think baseball just simply does not appeal as much to the soundbite, you know, we need a 10-second, you can do a 10-second football highlight, it's hard to do a 10-second baseball highlight, you know?
True. You can show that, yeah.
I just think as a culture, we are not. Can you imagine someone now listening? People still do this, but a younger person listening to an entire baseball game on the radio.
No, just, I can't listen. I can't imagine a younger person listening to any sport on the radio.
That's true. But you know, people used to do that with baseball mm-hmm. all the time.
Well, that
I mean,
was
all
that they
sports,
grew up,
obviously. But
yeah.
When you think about sports on the radio and Vin Scully and all these famous, it's people sitting around the radio listening to the Yankees.
Well, I think baseball lends itself to radio because it's not action-packed. You can say a couple things. You hear the bat crack. You hear one phrase or two. Football is constant motion. It's harder to describe, I think, on the radio, but it's much easier to translate to TV, and that's where I think a lot of this comes from. watching a football game, while it takes 3 to 3.5 hours, there's a lot more movement. There's a lot more in and out, a lot of shuffling of players and people,
colors,
personnel. Well,
there's these sort of, you know, these gladiatorial uniforms.
Well, there's a clock.
Right.
I mean, there's a clock. In baseball, there's not a clock. There's a clock in football. There's not a clock in cricket. So explain cricket. How that is so popular in Bangladesh.
Well, because how many other sports are in Bangladesh?
Soccer.
It's going to be soccer or cricket.
But a cricket match can take days to complete. Yeah. I mean, it makes baseball look fast by comparison.
But would you compare, what about their culture compared to ours? It's a much different culture.
Oh, it is a different culture. They don't
much
have
that. Much different
paced
culture, right?
I would say in the rural areas of India, it's probably a lot more slower paced, but I would think Delhi is probably a lot more fast-paced.
Well,
than
and here's the thing. I would be interested to know, I have no idea what the facts are about this, is whether younger generations of Indians are as attracted to interested in playing cricket, or whether there has been sort of a draw now from these other international sports. In other words, is the appeal, is the involvement of youth in that country as much attached to cricket as it was, let's say, even 20 years ago? I don't know the answer to that.
I would
suspect that's probably changing.
You're probably right. Then explain soccer. It's popular. It's not even in the top four, probably, in the United States.
Oh, yeah.
It's somewhere in the mix, but it's not in the top four.
In fact, the only time that soccer in the U.S. is really on the radar screen nationally is when there's the World Cup.
And the U.S. is not in the next
one. We didn't make it
out.
So that was a very bad.
That makes it bad for us to watch.
Not good.
But it's very popular elsewhere in the world. A lot of places it is. You go to Europe, soccer is the game. I mean, they trade players. It's a big deal.
Oh, sure.
You know.
Well, people like Messi and Ronaldo, they make more money than Tom Brady. Oh,
yeah, clearly. But why is it? I mean, it's a little faster pace, but the scoring is not there. It's more baseball scoring than it is football scoring. So why is that so popular in a Western society? Again, they don't have American football. I grant you that. But
again,
they could have baseball.
It's
they don't
pretty
think
much
they do.
It's the only game in town, right?
Why is that, though? Nothing else has really ever grown there. Cricket and soccer, really, in England. You know, outside
well, rugby.
Of England.
You have rugby.
Rugby a little bit. That's more Australia, but sure.
I don't know. I mean, part of it may be that there's, you know, what's sort of the cradle of soccer? Is it South America? I don't know the answer to that.
I would know where the cradle is.
But look at the size of some of these countries, though. I mean, in other words, they don't really have, in many ways, the wherewithal that America does to have four different sports leagues with the amount of talent, okay, at the highest level that's going to be required to play all of these different sports.
Okay.
It's just not. And again, you got to think about this. Think about some of the best soccer countries historically, okay? Many of them from South America, right? Brazil.
Right.
Argentina.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of these different, I mean, even Mexico.
But you got Germany and England
right,
and Spain.
You're right, Germany,
and
England, Spain.
France,
so
it's
sort of this
Italy.
European. I just don't think that any of those countries have any other real history. I mean, where does basketball originate? It originates in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Where does American football originate? I mean, in this country.
Yeah.
Baseball
Us.
In this country.
Yeah.
So we're the ones that sort of originated this. And
we haven't done a great job of exporting that. I mean, the NFL tries to put games in London and Mexico City and to fair to middling ratings and fans, but it really hasn't taken on. The World League of American Football didn't really take off. It kind of fizzled. You know,
basketball
is
actually
in other places.
Pretty big internationally. I mean, you look at places like China now.
But anybody who's good wants to come to the NBA.
Well, sure.
I mean, you only go to China or Turkey or Israel if you can't make it in the NBA, right? So we haven't done a great job of exporting. It's more exporting than it was. And I think the Olympics helped that with the Dream Team. But I don't know
but
that
do
we're
we are we really trying? I mean, I like
don't you
said,
think they want to though? I mean, China's an untapped market for the NBA. Do you think they don't want to have? I mean, UCLA went over there to play a game.
Sure.
I mean, that's a
well, and you look at the NBA now. I mean, there's more and more international players. There's tons. There's probably
fair
I'd
amount.
Say what 10% of the league.
That's probably right. 10-15%
internationals.
Yeah.
I just don't think there's – I think that a lot of it has to do with cultural differences.
Okay.
A lot of it has to do with, again, is there enough interest and money in it to form that kind of a league in, let's say, Germany.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that there is.
Is there enough interest to form a football franchise in Mexico City?
No.
You don't think?
Enough interest? Just one franchise?
Well, just one franchise to be part of the NFL.
Okay. I would think possibly.
And one in Toronto to take over the Argonauts. Failing fortunes.
I guess, but again, that's one franchise. I mean, you're
well,
asking
start
the question,
somewhere.
Yeah, but you're asking the question, you know, why don't these countries sort of have their own tradition? I don't think they have the infrastructure. I don't think they have the cultural interest. I don't think they have the talent demographic. Just look at some of the – what's your average – okay, we're going to stereotype here, but just look at size, right? Do you have a lot of 6'5", 280-pound Mexicans?
You don't, but do you need to if they're only playing against other Mexicans? I mean,
but then that's an entirely different sport.
Well, is it? Why is it a different sport? It's the same rules played
that's
in Mexico.
That's like asking me why do people like watching the NBA as opposed to the WNBA? No one is going to watch – seriously, no one is going to watch a bunch of, let's say, 5'8", 160-pound people playing football. Why? Because we're used to the level of athletic ability that we see in the NFL.
Okay, I'm not saying U.S. watches it, but you're saying in Mexico they wouldn't watch their own people play football?
I don't know. I don't
football?
Think so. I don't think so. And I think culturally, honestly, American football is just weird to other people. Like, what's with these big uniforms and these helmets and this garish? I just don't think culturally it's something that would
garish.
Fit.
Mexican wrestling masks are garish, but our
well,
uniforms are more garish.
What's Mexican wrestling?
Well, I mean, it's not – there's bigger wrestling. You've never seen Mexican wrestling?
Yeah. But I mean, it's not
– it's not huge, but right. I mean, it's certain places. But I mean, Texas, Arizona, California are close to these northern Mexican markets. It just seems like it wouldn't be that hard of a thing to say. Now, maybe culturally they don't have –
the other thing is it's also very expensive.
It is.
How hard is it to field a soccer team?
Not hard.
Not very. You need some uniforms and a ball. How hard is it to field a baseball
team? Then why isn't soccer more popular here? If it's easy to start.
Soccer is very popular. The issue with soccer is, I mean, when you talk at the youth level, soccer is hugely popular.
Sure.
The problem that we have, and I've said this for a long time, is that all of the best athletes in this country gravitate towards football, basketball. In other words, the talent level, once you get to that highest echelon, it's diluted to the point where we can't field when I say world class, I mean, obviously we have a world class soccer team in the sense that, yes, we typically make the World Cup, but we're not one of the best 10 soccer nations in the world. And you'd think
we're not, but we should be.
Well, we should be if people like LeBron James and Michael Jordan actually played soccer.
Yeah, LeBron James is what, 6'10"?
Yeah.
I mean,
6'9".
6'9"? How many 6'9" soccer players have you ever seen?
I'm not even talking
about
they're
6 foot
six
tops.
Nine. But again, they still have to be the elite of the elite, and those people don't play soccer in this country.
But a 6 foot guy is not playing NBA typically. Some maybe, but not a lot of them. 6 foot guy is not playing a lot of football other than wide receiver or cornerback. So you're saying we've opted out that all these players are going to those marks? I think the money is why they might pursue
well, that's the
that.
That's the second. You're absolutely
that's the
right.
only reason they would
that's
pursue
the second
that.
Reason is. If you're that skilled, and these people, you know, they sort of self-identify in this Darwinian sports universe, right?
Okay.
Yeah, you're not like, my goal is to be a professional American soccer player. Now, here's the thing. If you're really that good, you're going to go to Europe. You're going to go play in the Premier League.
Sure.
And you're going to make millions of dollars.
A whole lot more than you're going to make here.
But the diversification of sports in this country, you know, in any of those other countries, the only thing that you start doing from cradle from the time you are able to toddle around and kick a ball is you're playing soccer. That's what it is. In the U.S., you're playing multiple sports. You're playing football. You're playing basketball. And so there isn't that specialization there. I agree with you. I think it's money, but I also think that there is a huge, at the very elite level, there's a talent gap. We don't have the kind of athletes that are playing these other sports.
You think they're self-selected towards something else, and by
yes.
the time they realize they can't make it, in the NBA or the NFL, it's too late. They're not
right.
They
and
can't
the other thing is, even though we have a lot of people that are playing soccer at a youth level, in those other countries, when you're a top, let's say under 12 player, the level of your competition, because this is all that they do, is significantly better. So you take somebody who's considered an elite under 12 German or Brazilian soccer player, their skill set and their development is, I'm not going to say light years, but it is significantly ahead of what you would consider to be the elite under 12 average American soccer player of that, you know, right. in that strata.
Okay.
So, they're developing skills at a much faster rate because they're simply playing at a higher level from a much earlier age.
Is it state sponsorship that maybe have some contribution? I mean, we don't sponsor legally don't sponsor people here at the amateur level.
I mean, it could be that, but I also think, again, when you have everyone playing the same sport, that means all the best people are playing the same sport.
True.
And so you have to, if you get better or you don't. Right. So all the people that float to the top of that limited gene pool, so to speak, are all really, really good.
Well, I don't think people know this, but in England, they have soccer clubs and leagues that go down to the I just got off work, let's go play league, up to the professionals all the way through. And it could be, you know, a friends league, a pickup league, whatever, but they have leagues. And that you're right. That's what they do.
I'll share an anecdote. I mean, I played soccer most of my life, and I was, you know, listen, I was a pretty good soccer player. I mean, I made the state team in Pennsylvania. I was pretty good. When we were on the Pennsylvania state team, we would go to these tournaments, and of course, these are guys that are some of the guys on my team. They're all going to play Division One. I mean, these were good players.
Yeah,
we played a team from Brazil. Now, this was like the Brazil. It wasn't the B team. It wasn't the F team.
The U-12.
It wasn't the – this was like the – I think the kids that were considered to be sort of like the rejects. Like, so, I mean, they're nobody, right? They're not close to being anywhere near a level of soccer in Brazil that would be, you know, the national team or the junior. Yeah. They were a traveling team, you know, whatever. They're the ninth JV team for the junior. They destroyed us. Yeah. We couldn't get the ball. There was actually a point, I will never forget this, there was a point in the game where I think we're probably, what, 50? It was like 16-year-old kids, right? 16, 17. They crossed the ball to a kid who came in and literally did this flying sideways volley, like something you'd see in a movie.
Yeah.
And hammered it into the upper corner, and we had a great goalkeeper, and we all kind of stood there looking like, okay.
That just happened?
Yeah. What? And my point is that, again, the level that we were at, a pretty good, you know, state team, kids that were all stars in high school, playing against a nobody team from Brazil, they demolished us. Yeah. And these kids, again, were considered the rejects, probably. Like, oh, it's so sad our family has such a terrible soccer player for a son. And they ran circles around us.
Yeah.
It's just a different level
of competition. So you can be the best at your level, but you're in a small pond. Looking at that.
Well, you're actually in a very big pond. Well, the problem is that the pond that we're in, their pond is very small.
Yeah.
And it's filled with all of the best sharks, you know?
You're not used to diving around the sharks, are you? Okay. I get it. So we've agreed that it's probably cultural. It's probably money. It's probably self-selection based on where you're going to get the money, I think. But in the United States, the more popular sports, I think there's some drama when there's a time, where's a clock?
True.
I think that has a lot to do with football's popularity. You know it's going to end, and if they don't do this now, you have a little bit in the baseball, but it's not really the same. You got another inning.
Here's a question for you.
Yeah.
The closing question for our time. Do you think in 10 years the NFL will still be the most popular sport in America?
I think it will decrease in popularity, but I do not think it would still be the most popular because I don't see anything else taking its place. I don't think there's anything else right now that I can tell that's going to be more popular, but that doesn't mean football will be as popular. I think college football is going to ascend to the top spot versus NFL.
Really?
Because of issues with the NFL we talked about last fall. I don't know when that will be, but I think that's got more popularity going forward.
I think I agree with you that the NFL, but I think that if the trajectory that the NFL is on right now persists for the next decade, it is going to be a much, much more diminished league.
I agree with that. I think the money is going to go down because the revenue is going to go down from TV contracts. I do not think any sport's going to pick up the slack. I think people will say, I watched NFL. I'm just not watching anything else because it doesn't replace – baseball doesn't replace your love for NFL or, you know, soccer or NASCAR, whatever you want to pick, doesn't replace that level of involvement. for most people.
I think the one sport that could do it is the NBA. But, I mean, when Jordan was in the NBA, mm-hmm. that was at its apex. Mm-hmm. You need one of the – now, again, people would say, well, you have LeBron. But nobody compares to Jordan. So you need, you know, whatever, this – not even generational, multi-generational comet, a guy like that that can raise and elevate your entire sports profile. Mm-hmm. I think the NFL could get close to the NBA. I mean, one of the things – or the NBA could get close to the NFL. I think one of the things about the NBA that people like is that – and I think this was a brilliant move by David Stern going back to the Bird Magic era – is they did a great job of marketing their superstars. Now
– until you don't have some.
Exactly. Well, of course, and again, he was able to ride on the coattails of Michael Jordan for years because the entire league was, oh, we love Jordan. Mm-hmm. So now we'll just watch these random games because, well, Jordan's in the league.
Yeah.
There has never been a guy like that. But, you know, you still ask the average person on the street to name five NBA players. I bet they can do it, or some of them. Sure. Ask them to name five baseball players. Unless they're, again, this is unless someone that's not like an avid baseball fan. I don't think they could do it.
How about five NASCAR drivers? Can you name five NASCAR drivers?
I can, but...
five golfers.
Oh, easily.
Okay. The average person.
Oh, the average person? No, of course not. But that's a bad sign for baseball.
Oh, it is.
But the other thing is baseball has not done a very good job in sort of marketing. Like, for instance, who's the best player in baseball right now, arguably? Mike Trout, right? I think most people would say Mike Trout is the best player in...
Or one of the top three,
I think most people would say
anyway.
Mike Trout is. Okay, one of the top three. If you said to the average person on the street, who's Mike Trout, I bet 20% of them know who
20.
He is. Maybe.
That's high. Right. I think that's high.
But he's the best player in your sport.
I know.
That's a bad sign.
They market teams, and it's a regional team marketing. It's not a national marketing for baseball. It should be, but it isn't. So college football is the same way. It's very regional. You know, if you grew up in the Northeast, you're probably not a huge college football fan because there aren't a lot of good programs up into New England. I mean, name a New England team that you're thinking, oh, college football. Can't think of one. Yet the Patriots are revered in Boston.
I think the other thing that's interesting is that using that same kind of example, I think nowadays in the NFL, again, average, not even a casual fan, just somebody who by osmosis kind of knows about sports culture. If you step outside of quarterbacks... You ask people about an NFL player, I don't think most of them know. And I think I think that has changed. In other words, I think, you know, 10, 20 years ago, you know, people got Lawrence Taylor, Reggie White.
Like, dominant players excel and people know them because they're dominant. The average receiver, name the third receiver on the Dallas Cowboys.
Sure.
Who is it?
But even like, let's take running backs. Okay, how many people could name the top three, arguably, running backs in the NFL right now? I don't think many could.
Name the second string running back on the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, I don't know.
Ezekiel Elliott is number one. Who's number two? You don't know.
So, I mean, again, this goes to my point that I think the public consciousness in terms of, we know all these guys, even for the NFL, is ebbing.
Well, they got helmets on. You can't see them all the time. They don't do a lot of commercials nationally, so you don't see them all the time. You don't know who they are. Even when they're on a commercial, unless they put their name up and tell them what team they're on, they don't know who they are.
It's most of these guys that have a brand, right? Like Odell Beckham Jr. Why does everyone know who he is? It's not really even because, he plays for the Giants, because he sort of created this social media
persona. It's the hair. It's the
one-handed catches. Yeah. Even, what's his name, Chad Johnson, when he used to play for the – right? They knew him because of his antics.
Right.
He's a receiver, but he does all – right.
Yeah, stuff like that. It's interesting. I don't know. Let's close out. We got a voicemail from a listener, and I purposely put this at the end so the listener would have to listen to the sports to hear their voicemail.
Shalom, my friends. Your thought-provoking segment of the two senators advocating for immigration restraints in the past and now advocating for non-restraint reminded me of a song. It was a song I sang as a child, and perhaps you sang it as well. It went something like this. Oh, be careful little feet where you go. Oh, be careful little hands what you touch. Oh, be careful little eyes what you see. Oh, be careful little mouth what you speak. It was a great reminder to me that once spoken it can't not be taken back like an unwanted gift. It also spoke volumes for passion, which obviously neither of the two ever had. Your stance on whatever the cause shall never be swayed by what others think when passion is the driver. Thunderstruck with the show, boys. All the best. Jerry.
So, Jerry, thank you. That was not Jerry's actual voice.
Wow.
That was
that's almost a little creepy.
That was English Devin, not English Daniel from last week. I just had to put that in there because he will not want to wait till the end to hear that, but he did.
I don't know if he's going to like being English Devin.
I could have made him.
Can you get one that sounds like
a woman?
No, like a German. That would be very good.
I can.
I would like that better.
I could have gotten it. I was looking at the Japanese woman or a German man, and it was the accent
like
was a little thick.
Good, like Schweinhund.
Well, that wasn't in German. It was English with the German.
Right. But that's
German.
We need a good
accent.
Thick.
We might not be able
German
to hear what
accent.
They're saying.
Yeah, but I think that would be good.
So, Jerry, there you go. We appreciate your comments. Thank you for delving into our thought process and the whole thing.
Yeah. We made you see. That wasn't my plan. That was Chad's evil.
That
scheme
was my
to
evil
make
plan.
You listen to all the sports.
I know
stuff.
That Jerry does not prefer
In fact,
the sports.
You know what?
Part.
He probably didn't hear this because he would have stopped listening by now.
That's not my problem.
You didn't even. You should have given a
listen to the end.
Right. Got like a teaser.
We're gonna see. We're gonna see if he actually listens because I know I'll get a comment if he does. So, thank you for listening. I'm Chad.
I'm Tony.
Good night.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Hannah Tree production.